94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm with Charmont. Okay, mm-hmm. Let me get it right. Charmont Little, mm-hmm. Poet Laureate.
Yes.
City, yes. New Haven.
Yes.
Emeritus.
Emeritus now, yes.
We going to get into all that, what all that means in a second. Where you from, bro?
I'm from right here in New Haven, man. I was born in Franklin Street Projects, Grand Avenue area. And then my mom got married when I was about 12, and we moved to the Hartford area. And then my sophomore year in high school, we moved back down to the New Haven area, moved into Hampden. And, I was on my own at 17, and I've been back in New Haven pretty much ever since.
Up and down, traveling around, mm-hmm. Parents doing what they can, right?
Always, man. You know how New Haven got some of the realest parents, hardworking parents, especially with my generation. My parents did what they could, man. So a lot of y'all know my dad. My dad was Joe at Popeyes, the one who talked a lot of junk on the front line, short, dark-skinned brother. That was my dad. So, he worked hard. My mother worked hard, took care of the family, and, yeah.
You described your dad, loud, mm-hmm. vocal, not afraid.
Not afraid at all.
Do you take that, a little bit of that from him? What else do you learn from him?
I take a lot of that from him. My mom is she's also the real one. She's just a little quieter with it. She'll tell you what you need to know when you need to know it. My dad was just, you know, it's in your face. You either like it or you don't. He had a saying, but I won't say it on the radio. You know, you scratch your so-and-so and get glad. that's pretty much what it was, you know, with my dad.
And your mom? What was your mom's name?
My mom is Anita. Joseph Springfield is my dad. Anita Springfield is my mom. Yeah. So, wonderful lady. Matter of fact, she's the biggest support system outside of my wife. My mother, she goes to every event, whether I'm the curator of the event, whether I'm the headliner, if I'm a part of it. She's been to every award ceremony. If she could be to every show that I do around the world, she would be. She's my biggest supporter all day. I know people be getting sick of her because she be my baby. So
ain't no one gonna get sick of that, man. There's nothing wrong with that. So she's a supporter. She was there for you growing up. Our parents do a good thing of hiding things from us, mm-hmm. their realities. Mm-hmm. Did she hide a lot of things, or was there a coming to Jesus moment where, son, this is the way things are?
My mother's a very traditional woman, so like she didn't want me to know that Santa Claus was fake type stuff. You know, my dad was like, ain't no Santa Claus coming down here. This is us. She was very traditional in that sense. But when it came to real life situations, especially with me, because I was a little rebellious when I was younger. Like I said, I moved out of the house when I was 17 and had my own apartment with who is not my wife. We've been together since we were 15 years old. My mother was real talk for real understanding. You know, she didn't hide. She's like, son, life is life, and there's no games out here. This ain't playing house. This ain't, you can come on back home to mama. It's not that. So she was like, what you do, you stand in. So, yeah, your consequences is made by your decisions. That's what make you an adult, being able to handle the consequences of your actions. So,
how was navigating the school system? You seem to be a very bright young man. And a bad young man. You're probably the same age, but still.
Yeah. I started off going to Nathan Hale. We were the only black kids that went out to Nathan Hale when I was going there. We were bused from Franklin Street out to Nathan Hale. After that, I went to Jackie Robinson. Now, like I said, when I was about 12 years old, my dad moved us to Windsor. So when I got to Windsor, he was running the Popeye's Chicken on Albany Avenue in Hartford. They wanted to put me back two grades because they were, you know, that's an all-white town. It really wasn't no black folks in Windsor at that time. They wanted to put me back two grades, even though here I was ahead of the class. there I was behind. And my mother pitched a fit, was like, no, you will not. You will not put my baby behind. He'll work himself out. He'll get it done. So they kept me in the class. And me not wanting to be embarrassed, because the way they did it then, you went to your homeroom to get your report card. And, you know, you got all the other children, all the white children around showing their A's and B's. I didn't want to be embarrassed. So I worked my butt off to make sure my report card looked like theirs, because I didn't want to be the little black boy with the bad grades. I wasn't as smart as them. Get to high school. I was very athletic, played football and stuff like that. Then my dad moved us from Windsor to Canton, Connecticut. And that really was in the boonies at that point, you know. But going to school there, before they asked me if I like math or science or economics, they said, can you play basketball? And that was their first question. And I could. But overall, school was cool. At 17, I started acting up. I thought I was grown, went to school hardly, almost didn't graduate. But I was smart. So I had to get a 92 on my English final, and I had to get 89 on my math final. And I got 100 on both of them to graduate. And I barely went to school my senior year, because I was on my own, thought I was grown, not realizing growing is holding responsibility and finishing what you start. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Young, making bad decisions, poor decisions. What were the influences in those decision-making process at that age? It was the lure of the streets, just because there's a setback that when we develop survival mechanisms early on in our lives, mm-hmm. that we kind of carry those, and those things really do carry us for a long time. Mm-hmm. Would you accrue some of that to that, or was it the culture?
It's a combination of all of it. So just like most of us in our families, we had hustlers, and we had people who know how to make things happen to make money for them. And coming up in the 90s hip hop era, you know, I fell into some of those traps, and then being on my own, I was like, I had to find a way to make extra money, make sure, because I was very prideful. I didn't want to ask mommy and daddy for no money for my bills or nothing like that. Like I said, I've been on my own since I was 17. So me and my wife, we basically was like, we're going to do what we got to do. I fell into that, you know, pretty heavily. Had some instances where I almost lost my life and stuff, living up in Hartford and stuff. If you raise your children the right way, most of the time, that light goes off somewhere, and they'd be like, nah, this ain't for me. This ain't it. And also, I had cousins that were in the city that was telling me, this ain't you. You too smart for this. And they were telling me, they knew I wrote poetry and stuff. So they were, you the young cousin hanging out, and all your big cousins is laughing at you and telling you, nah, bro, you way smarter than that. Get out of here, this, that, and the third. So they were pushing me to the opposite side of the spectrum. And I was trying to hold fast to this specific life. And they was like, nah, you're going to be something greater. And I didn't know what they were talking about to me. I was just writing poems and
doing your thing. Mm-hmm. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. Charmont Little.
Yes, sir.
In the building. Poet Laureate Emeritus, New Haven. We're going to get into that in a second. Poetry is your thing.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start writing?
So,
and who influenced you? Because sometimes it's like one person that says, hey.
Well, there's two. So, my dad, when my mom married my dad, he's not my biological father. He's my dad, literally. He was really big on education. He didn't believe on kids going outside Monday through Thursday. You went outside Friday and Saturday, you back home in the house on Sunday to get ready for school. So he would make me read the dictionary. That was part of my work. Like every day I had to read the dictionary, and I had to write and different things of that nature. So that was the foundation of it. When I really fell in love with poetry was a teacher I had by the name of Miss Vernon when I was in Nathan Hale. And this was a woman, this Italian woman was not scared. She used to drive up in Franklin Street Projects in her Mercedes and pick me up and take me out to her house in East Haven to the beach. And which, you know, you can't do that no more. You're a weirdo. You do that now. But she would sit on the beach with me and have me reading poetry and getting me ready for the next school year. I don't know what made her feel she wouldn't do that for me, but that's what she did. So my love of poetry and writing and words, you know, we came up in a time where we had a spelling test every week. They don't do that really no more. But yeah, she, my dad and Miss Vernon. And then I stopped writing because, you know, when I came up, you were considered a punk and called a whole bunch of other names if your homeboys knew you wrote poetry. So I would be hanging
worse
out.
Than that.
Yeah, yeah, facts. I would be hanging out during the day, and at night I'm at home reading Langston Hughes and writing poetry, and no one ever knew it for a number of years. And then I put it away, and my brother, my younger brother, finally went to college at Western. And so I'm playing the big brother role, and I go up there tearing apart his dorm room, making sure ain't no drugs and nothing in there. He's not acting up. And I come across a poetry book, and we sit down and we talk about it. And that got me back into writing. And then I went to the New Haven Public Library downtown. There was a lady down there by the name of Aisatu. And Aisatu was running open mic at that position. That's where I met my man, Balt Biden, here in New Haven. And yeah, then they kept going from there. There was a space where life was rough for me. I had lost my uncle, who was one of my best friends. And I wanted to commit suicide. So I was getting ready to, I was planning to jump off of West Haven Pier. And the only thing that pulled me down was really a poem came to my head, and I had to get down. I had to write it. I had to write it out, and I never turned back from that point.
Do you remember the poem?
Not verbatim. I have it tucked away.
What was the gist of it?
For some reason, everything that I felt I needed to jump for, the poem told me every reason I didn't need to. It talked about, it's not like it's a cohesive poem. It talks about my uncle, how I felt about that. It talks about my relationship being a young man in a relationship with a young woman and being confused. It talks about my biological father not loving me. It talked about a multiple of things that were plaguing me at that time, and being young at that time, being 18, 19 years old at that time, not knowing how to figure it out, and too scared to talk to people about it, because, you know, you can't be soft, you can't talk to people, right? So that's what that poem did. And that poem also made me understand that was my voice. That's how I'm going to talk to people. That's how you're going to hear me.
It's important to learn how to express yourself, right? Because it's not a tool that we're taught or given, and especially in certain environments in our society. Mm-hmm. How important has that in your development since that point on to be able to express yourself in a healthy fashion?
It's been tremendous. I still have more work to go, because there are certain traumas that happened to me when I was younger. So people give me this credit as being this dynamic writer and this dope writer and performer. But what I tell people all the time is, you haven't heard the best of me yet, because I haven't told you the deepest parts of my heart. You know how Usher's greatest album is Burn. Why? Because it was completely emotional, and it was truth about what happened in this life. So what you've gotten from me so far are the social ills that, but not the personal ills. So, I'm writing a book now, and I'm writing a one man play. That's where we're going to see how much you love me. Once those are complete and you find out the personal ills that I deal with.
Hmm. We try to mask. We're good. Mm-hmm. We're good hiders mm-hmm. of pain. Mm-hmm. I see that you still struggle with letting people in. Mm. Does writing help, or do you write to express or to heal the trauma?
Well, first thing first is that I just got to tell all young writers, I don't write for crowds. I don't write for anybody. I write for me. This literally, I write for me, and you just happen to like it. So it helps with everything. There's poems that I've written that people may never hear. I have to get through it. Because me being a young black man in America, I am angry. I am angry. I am frustrated. People say they want to listen, but more so they want to be entertained. And so poetry is one of the only things that listens to me. And even that page takes all of my mistakes. Don't judge me. Allow me to correct them to make myself better on that page. Poetry is the only thing that allows me to do that. My wife is probably, like I said, she's second to my mother as far as the support that I give. She's the reason why, she's one of the reasons why I am who I am today for being the woman that she is. But like I explained to her, I was asked by a friend of mine, shout out to my man, Michael Chief Peterson, the poet laureate of New Britain, to be on his second album. He asked me to write a poem on how I wanted to be loved. And it was hard to write that poem because I didn't know how I want to be loved, because no one ever asks a man how he wants to be loved. We're just given a love and told that we're ungrateful for not cherishing it. And we're always told we need to love people the way they want to, but no one loves us. So my poetry is my love. Non-judgmental. It's unconditional, which is not in most relationships, platonic or otherwise.
Unconditional. Bearing your soul takes a certain technique and a certain style. I mean, do you work at it as you're writing? Are you conscious that you're, you know, taking off the layers of the onion, so to speak, and that's what we're known in our artisans?
So I learned from a number of writers to write with the door open. Meaning, the artistic part of my writing doesn't come till afterwards. The pain of my writing starts first. The joy of my writing starts first. So you write with the door open, meaning you let everything flood out onto the page. Then you go back, and then you start editing and revising the poem, creating the layers of the onion, using double entendres and similes and things of that nature to paint a picture, to make it clear to people so they can have a mental vision of what you're saying, like literally painting a picture with words. That's the process. I always start with what my emotions are first. I don't try to create this dynamic poem, this oohs and ahs, because it's more important to me than that. The greatest thing is to do a poem and people don't know when to clap. To do a poem and people don't know when to clap.
You're listening to The Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. Mr. Little is here checking out the time, because time flies when you're having fun.
Facts.
Like I tell preachers, the worst sermon is the long sermon, and the worst poem is the one that seems to never end.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And people don't clap. Charmont Little, ladies and gentlemen, here on the Electric Drum on YBC. I'm Jose Candelario, and we're doing our thing on the Electric Drum. The beat goes on. What would be that advice to that young Mr. Little that was not encouraged, or the young Mr. Little you see in your life as you come across in this day and age? Are you perpetuating the negative, or are you just head stick to it, young man? Express yourself, learn your words.
A little bit of both. What I teach right now, so I have a company called Influence of Life because that's my stage name, Influence. So what I teach right now is simply to first, you have to be honest with yourself. And if I could tell my younger self, as I tell young men today, you're not going to go forward if you're lying to yourself. If you're lying to yourself, that's what you're doing. You're living a lie, right? So first you have to be honest with yourself. Then you have to realize that what is for you in this world is going to be for you, and there's nothing no one can do about it. Because in everyone's life, everyone gets their 15 minutes. But it always depends on how you take advantage of that 15 minutes. If you're prepared for that 15 minutes. So if I would tell my younger self anything, is continue working. Get prepared. Because you're going to have your moment. And when you have it, you have to make sure you shine. Because that's what the rest of your life is going to be predicated on. Taking advantage of, some people get many opportunities, but mostly everybody gets at least one. You got to be prepared.
As you prepare yourself now in your life on a daily basis, managing trauma is difficult. I mean, it's not an easy thing. Does poetry help you take the next step, or have you developed other tools in life or other philosophies that really help you for, you know?
Brother, I invented an entire curriculum that I put myself through first. So my company, Influence of Life, I teach social coping skills and conflict resolution using poetry as the vehicle. And I teach this through colleges and schools and summer programs everywhere. I use poetry to help, again, like I said earlier, to help me talk about the ills and the things that pain me. The difference is when I use it for young people, I need to make sure there's someone else in the room that can help guide the emotions that's coming out. Because when I had to deal with my emotions on my own and how to deal with these poems, and nobody in my family was writers. No one understood what these poems meant. I didn't have real mentors until I became older, right? So I had to figure a lot of stuff out on my own. And so that's what poetry does for me. Poetry has done everything for me. It helped me create my curriculums. It helped me create my clothing line, the Influence of Life clothing line. It took me to Africa 3 months ago. I just came back from Nigeria, teaching in Nigeria and performing in Nigeria. Poetry has been everything. It's how it's a complete spiritual and emotional ride for me.
Now I understand when you say that you were on a short sabbatical for the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. Usually does happen when you have a transformative experience, such as going back to Africa, mm-hmm. and seeing where you might have been from, because we all don't know where we're from, mm-hmm. but to see life and experience and get away from what you think is poverty, what you think is hardship, and then you see it in a different light. Mm-hmm. Is that why these past two months where you say you've taken a step back, was a lot of reflection on some of those things?
It was a number of things. First, I worked my behind off the last 2 years for Poet Laureate. Shout out to Miss Ife and Culturally Lit and her entire team.
Ife Gardine.
Yes, Miss Ife Gardine.
Ife Michelle Gardine. Yes, as I'm absolutely. Always corrected.
Yes, put some respect on her name. Yep. But yes, so I worked my behind off for those 2 years. I probably did 300 to 400 shows within the 2 years. I didn't say no to anything. I didn't say no to it, whether it was free, whether it was for money, if I can have the chance to represent the city and go do it, I did it. So passing it on to Yex was a complete exhale. And then having the opportunity to go to Africa and be able to reset and re-identify who I am and what is my purpose going to be. And then I was summoned to Wale Soyinka, the Nobel Peace Prize winning poet. I was summoned to his house. He found out I was coming and he had me come to his house. And the funny story about that is I cried. I'm sitting in his house. I'm walking through his home. I get to see where he writes and his body imprint in the chair. When I was on my way to his house, he had to leave because at that time, that's when Trump was revoking his pass into America. His visa was revoking his visa at the same time I'm there. So he calls me from the embassy and he said, I'm sorry I couldn't meet you there, but this is a moment in history. He said, the moment I have an American poet laureate in my home is the same moment the American president is revoking my visa. That was the most incredible and most realistic feeling for me of what it is to be a black man in America, no matter how America affects you, no matter where you come from. So when I came back, I didn't want to do anything. I haven't touched a pen. I haven't written anything. All I've done was try to enjoy my family and work. I'm also a nurse, here in the city. So that's all I did. That's all I've been doing. This is the first engagement, really, I have with the public since I got back.
But, you know, it's okay to take a step back and redefine. Mm-hmm. Because that's really what you're doing. It's like you're redefining ideologies, redefining terms, mm-hmm. what certain things mean to you. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to do that, especially when you reach a plateau. Because you haven't reached, you still haven't reached.
I got more to go, definitely.
You haven't reached a pinnacle.
I ain't done.
But when you reach a plateau and you get to this certain level, mm-hmm. I mean, you're looking back. And you're looking forward at the same time because yep. I can hear you in your voice that there's still things to work on. Mm-hmm. The work is never done.
Nope.
Is this next stage as you see it mm-hmm. coming to fruition? Because we manifest our destinies.
Right.
What do you see for yourself?
So I'm still going to be, as my stage name, Influence. I'm still going to be influenced, still going to be performing. But right now, I am really more focused on creating opportunities for other artists here in the city and abroad. One is the show that I put on called Lyrical Haven, which is an R&B and poetry mashup of entertainment where I have a live band and the whole thing. That show is going to go on. And then I have the Slam. I sold out the Schubert Theater in August. I invite poets from all over the country to come and battle for $2,000. And outside of that is to continue creating the workshops that I do and tutoring younger poets and finishing my book and finishing my one-man play. I debuted it earlier in the year at the Connecticut Storytellers Convention, and the first 45 minutes of it got rave reviews. It was hard because it's stories about me and my dad and all the things. You understand where my poems came from, because it's a combination of poetry and monologue. So you understand where my poems came from and why they are what they are. But that's my future. My future is to continue creating and being a curator and trying to dive deep as I can into my art.
You see the power of platform and community.
Yeah.
You see the influence. And when you travel, you kind of like, you really see how important it is to have a platform that can be shared with many people.
Mm-hmm.
But that comes from knowing that there's enough room for everybody.
Everybody. There's enough money. There's enough room. There's enough everything for everybody to go around. We just have to be willing to share it. I'm talking about directly to our people. We have to be willing to share with each other. We are the only group of people that if I give you $1,000 to start a business, I want $10,000 back tomorrow. When other groups of people work together and build something together, and no one has to have all the shine at one time. That's my goal. One of my goals is to build a festival in New Haven that has to do with spoken word. And this festival has to do with workshops and a poetry slam and a whole bunch of other things. This city deserves that, man. This city is one of the most beautiful artistic cities in the country. And the talent that is in this city, artistically with visual art and with poetry, is phenomenal. And we have too many top poets from this area alone, not for us to have something of that magnitude, a festival of that magnitude here. So that's what I'm working on.
You are listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City, to Charmont Little. Influence, Charmont Influence, quotation marks, as I do my air quotes, Little. Poet Laureate Emeritus New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
We're already getting near the end here. Can you talk a little bit about being Poet Laureate and what you've been at it? Emeritus now?
Okay, so the Poet Laureate was a position that was created by Miss Ife Michelle Gardine and her team, Culturally Lit. And there was a process you had to go through. You had to write poems and show you as a writer. They looked at your resume and things of that nature. And I was the finalist of four. And I had to term for 2 years from 2024 to 2026. And it's passed on to Yexandra Diaz Yex, and I've moved into a position called Poet Laureate Emeritus, which basically gives me the name Laureate for a lifetime. It's actually something that's an honor because of the work that I've done in this city in the support of, in the pushing forward of poetry and art in this city. It's an honor, man. I wouldn't want it to be nowhere else but New Haven.
Got a last couple minutes here. You want to say anything to the public? The floor is yours. Anything you want to plug? Anything we got to look out for?
So just look out. Just follow my page, man. If I'm able to say it, on Instagram, Influence A Life and Influence A Life LLC. That's where you'll see all the shows that I'm putting on for the city, the poetry shows, the workshops. You'll see where I've been, what I'm doing. And for all you young poets out there, don't let no one tell you that you can't make it. When I was growing up, they used to always tell me that you had to have a basketball or football in your hand to make it. I make arenas of people cheer with a pen and a piece of paper. Please don't let no one believe anything different.
Thank you so much for your words. Thank you for your time.
Appreciate you.
Long overdue. I think we bumped into each other almost 2 years ago at a AAA.
Yep, yep.
You remember, right?
Yes, sir, I do.
But, you know, everything in due time. So I thank you very much for taking out the time to talk to the community. We appreciate. And hopefully in the future, we get to bring you back on and get some more, especially when you're dropping this play full-fledged. We can go and support you, and we're going to be looking out for your event. So thank you again.
Appreciate you, man. Appreciate you. Love you, New Haven.
With that said, this is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario, and this has been the words of Charmont Influence Little. Again, thank you so much for your time. And for my audience out there, like always, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for listening.